Thank you.
Jayadadha Madhava Kuncha Bihari. Jayadadha Madhava Kuncha Bihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivada Dhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivada Dhari. Yashodhanandana Braja Janaranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jayadadha Madhava Jaya Kuncha Bihari. Jayadadha Madhava Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Ashtotara Shatashri Srimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayamudirayet nashtapraisho badreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki. So, I would like to beg all of your blessings, everyone here and everyone hearing are most likely my seniors, so I'm somehow audacious enough to stand in front of you and speak, so please be merciful to me and give me your blessings. So we're reading from Canto 10, Chapter 13, Text Number 28. Yeah, that's the one on the board. Ekada charyan vatsan sadamo bhanam avishat panchashasu triyamasu ayana puranishvajaha ekadacharyan vatsan sadamo bhanam avishat panchashasu triyamasu ayana puranishvajaha. Please repeat. Ekada charayan vatsan. Ekadacharyan vatsan. Panchashasu triyamasu. Ayana puranishvajaha. Word for word. Ekada. One day. Charayan vatsan. While taking care of all the calves. Sa Ramaha. Along with Balaram. Vanam. Within the forest. Avishat. Entered. Pancha Shasu. Five or six. Tri Yamasu. Nights. Hayana. A whole year. Apuranishu. Not being fulfilled. 5 or 6 days. Before the completion of 1 year. Ajaha. Lord Sri Krishna. Translation. One day, 5 or 6 nights before the completion of the year, Krishna, tending the calves, entered the forest along with Balaram. In the purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Up to this time, even Balaram was captivated by the bewilderment that covered Brahma. Even Balaram did not know that all the calves and cowherd boys were expansions of Krishna, or that he himself was also an expansion of Krishna. This was disclosed to Balaram just 5 or 6 days before the completion of the year. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitangena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kudamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindha Dhina Bandha Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Ginim Yat Kripam Tamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dhinataranam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Yadeshatarine Vanshakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhar, Srivas Adi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So I'll just read the translation and the purport one more time, because they're very short. The translation, one day, 5 or 6 nights before the completion of the year, Krishna, tending the calves, entered the forest along with Balaram. And the purport, up to this time, even Balaram was captivated by the bewilderment that covered Brahma. Even Balaram did not know that all the calves and cowherd boys were expansions of Krishna, or that he himself was also an expansion of Krishna. This was disclosed to Balaram just 5 or 6 days before the completion of the year. So, I'll zoom out here a little bit and explain to where we are, and then talk about this verse specifically and see what comes. So this chapter entitled The Stealing of the Calves, Stealing of the Boys and the Calves by Brahma, is what is known as the Brahma Vimohan Lila, or the Bewilderment of Brahma, Krishna's bewildering Lord Brahma. And so what has happened here is, in the previous chapter, the Agasura Lila took place, and then Parikshit Maharaj questioned and said, so why? Wait, what happened in that year that you said passed? And I won't go into the details of that, but he asked the question, and then Shukadeva Goswami said, you're a great Vaishnav, therefore you like to relish details, so I'll tell you the details. So then he proceeded to tell what happened just after the Agasura pastime. And he narrates a beautiful scene where Krishna goes to the bank of the Yamuna with the cowherd boys to take lunch. And then he speaks of a trick that Lord Krishna decides to play on Lord Brahma. And actually, in one of the purports, to underline that Krishna is very much aware of what's going on, and he is, especially in the case of this pastime, directly orchestrating it. It's not just Yogamaya facilitating something for his pleasure, as is the normal case in Vraj, but he's actually orchestrating this himself. Is that one of our acharyas makes the comment that that Krishna's Lila Shakti and his Sarva Sankalpa Shakti could sense that he had these desires when he was sitting down to take lunch, and that they therefore went to get Lord Brahma so that he could fulfill these desires. And so Krishna, in enacting this pastime, he's carrying out principally four purposes. One is his desire to fulfill the desires of the elder gopis and gopas, and to subsequently increase their love for him. The second is to bewilder Lord Brahma, and the third goes right along with the second, in that ultimately he wanted to please Lord Brahma by showing him thousands of Vasudev forms, who to that point was his Ishtadev. Then the fourth was to show that he can bewilder anyone. In other words, because these are Naimittika Leelas and they're meant for us to learn how to approach Vraj, to lay down the tattva in such a way that we understand that Krishna is supreme over everybody else. And that he does that by showing that he can also bewilder Balaram. So Brahma's bewilderment really begins from the point where he doubts Krishna's divinity. So basically, Krishna's Lila Shakti and his Sarva Sankalpa Shakti, they go and they retrieve Lord Brahma. Somehow or other, they get him, because he wasn't there, apparently, when Agasura was killed. Many other demigods were there, but he himself wasn't there and didn't see it. He came later, while the cowherd boys were taking lunch. And so he saw all of the intimacy that is in Vraj, which he had never witnessed before. And he had heard that this Krishna was that same Vasudev who he worshipped, but when he saw the intimacy that was here, it wasn't compatible with his understanding of who God is supposed to be. Because for the demigods, for Lord Brahma, God is supposed to be Yagya. He's supposed to be the person who is... So when they saw him doing things, when Lord Brahma specifically saw him doing things that weren't compatible with his previous understanding of his Ishtadev, he thought, this can't be my Ishtadev. He saw Krishna eating out of his left hand, carrying things with his left hand, taking them and eating them. He saw him sharing with other boys, even eating things they had already bitten off of, not even just eating from the same plate, which Vedically is a no-go, because it's considered unclean for a brahmana to eat like that, or for somebody in a higher caste, we can say, not just a brahmana, because the brahmanas, the kshatriyas, and the vaishyas, they all in Vedic times, they have a very high standard of cleanliness. And so he saw this, and it was not compatible with his understanding of who Krishna could be. And so a doubt arose in his heart that this can't be that Vasudev. This can't be the person who I've been worshipping. And even to substantiate this, in the beginning of the 10th canto, we see Lord Brahma went to pray to his Ishtadev at the milk ocean on the behalf of Mother Bhumi. He said, Mother Bhumi is suffering and she's under so much stress. There are so many demonic militant forces that are on this planet. And so he was the via medium to Krishna, to Vasudev, to Vishnu. And so he was thinking, I have a relationship with, I don't know who is this. You know, how can this be God? This just can't be God. There's no way. And so he thought, I'll give him a test. I have to test him. I'll play a trick. And so he gets the calves, because the calves were some distance away. He gets them to wander a little further into the forest, and then he takes them away by his mystic power. And then, to put some slang, and he goes and he takes the cowherd boys. And so then Krishna comes back and he's wondering, where are the cowherd boys? He knows, but he plays along with the trick, because ultimately he's the one orchestrating the trick. It's like he's tricking the guy who's playing the trick. It's like a far out double entendre. And so then Lord Brahma is thinking, I've got him. And then he goes back to check, just because he's thinking, let me see how the cowherd boys and the calves are doing. He goes to check and he sees that they're there. And then he comes back again to look at Krishna, and he sees that Krishna's with all the cowherd boys and all the calves on the bank. And he's thinking, wait a second. How is it that I just saw them there and now they're here? They're with Krishna. It doesn't make any sense. So he goes back and he looks again. And he sees they're in the cave and he goes. And then he starts to think, oh no. I really, really messed up. Maybe something is going on here that is above me. And so it's described that in that period of time where Brahma went to check in the place that he had taken the cowherd boys and the calves, that an entire year had elapsed. Because for Lord Brahma, in his time, we've all heard, we hear this very early on in Krishna consciousness, that a year for the demigods is like so many thousands of years. I don't remember the exact number. For us here in the middle planetary systems. And so for a moment in his time was like a year here. And so in that year, Krishna expanded himself as all the calves and the cowherd boys in order to fulfill this first desire that he had to reciprocate with the gopas, the gopis, and the cows. Because the cows are the mothers of the calves, and they all had this deep desire that I really want Krishna as my son. It'll never happen because I have a son and Krishna is Mother Yashoda's son, but somehow or other, because their love is so deep, they're just thinking, what if? What would it be like if Krishna was that much more mine? And so to fulfill that, even without their direct knowledge of it, Krishna manifests as all the calves and the cowherd boys. And so in that year, he had many, many loving dealings, and it was all of Vraj was even more ecstatic, even though Vraj is the pinnacle of ecstasy at all times. It's constantly increasing. This is one of those ways in which it transcendentally increased and increased and increased. And so he had many loving dealings in that period. And then this is where we end up on this verse. It says, 5 or 6 days before that year elapsed. So in that moment where Lord Brahma went away because he thought, oh no, how are the calves and cowherd boys here when I just saw them there? In the moment where he went to double check and a whole year elapsed, and that whole year is coming to a close. There are 5 or 6 days and nights, as the verse says, left in that year where Lord Brahma is about to come back. And so the verse says, that Krishna entered the forest along with Balaram. And then Srila Prabhupada in the purport, he says it in a very interesting way, I'll just read it again because it's very short. He says, up to this time, even Balaram was captivated by the bewilderment that covered Brahma. Even Balaram did not know that all the calves and cowherd boys were expansions of Krishna, or that he himself was also an expansion of Krishna. This was disclosed to Balaram just 5 or 6 days before the completion of the year. Now, Prabhupada said this in a very interesting way because he runs together two of the facts in, I don't know why, but in a way that makes it appear a little bit vague, almost like Lord Balaram was also taken away as one of the cowherd boys and the calves. And so when we research that further, because it becomes very evident later on that Balaram, in this chapter, that Balaram is there the whole time, and that he was under the spell of Yogamaya. And this is the period, actually, as our acharyas have told us, that Yogamaya decides to, in 4 steps, remove that covering. And I won't go into detail about that because it's somebody else's class later on, so I don't want to steal that. But to put it simply, this, at this point, 6 days or so before Lord Brahma comes back, Yogamaya removes her covering from Lord Balaram, and Lord Balaram, he understands that, whoa, what is going on here? Because he's no longer under the spell. He looks around, and he starts to see that the Vrajvasis love their sons a lot more than they used to. Every time I see one of the cowherd boys with their parents are crying. Their mothers are, they're nursing them every possible chance that they can get. They're acting like Mother Yashoda does whenever Krishna leaves their house. The cows, one instance is described that the cowherd men are bringing the cows onto Govardhan Hill, and the cows looking down and seeing their older calves who have stopped milking, they run away from their newer calves who are still with them to milk those calves, to feed those calves, because those calves are Krishna. And so Krishna is fulfilling this desire. And so Balaram starts to notice that this doesn't make any sense. These Vrajvasis are exhibiting levels of loving reciprocation, levels of prema, which are unprecedented between each other. We only see this when they interact with Krishna. So what is this thing? And he starts to think, Krishna must be behind this. Because then he thinks, I've been bewildered by this. You know, how is it that I didn't notice this before? How is it just coming upon me all of a sudden? And he thinks, is it some maya? Is it some magic that has been cast over this place? He thinks some Nri Maya maybe, some human has cast some spell, and he thinks, no, that's not possible. And then he thinks, perhaps Kamsa, who wants to kill all of us and wants to kill Krishna, because Balaram has more information about the nature of their overall situation than most of the Vrajvasis, because he's the Supreme Personality of Servitor Godhead. He knows a bit more. He's Vishnu Tattva. In Vraj, it's him and Krishna, they're in on a lot of things. And so he thinks, is it Kamsa and some Rakshasi? Has he hired some, because he's been so unsuccessful in killing all of the in killing Krishna and in, you know, ruining the Vrajvasis? Has he hired someone to cast some spell? And he thinks, that's not possible. Because I'm Mahavishnu. I'm the controller of Mahamaya. What to speak of some Rakshasi's Maya? I control Mahamaya. And then he comes to the conclusion that it could only be Krishna. Only Krishna could have cast this spell on me. And so then he goes to Krishna and he asks, because he thinks, what gives? You know, why didn't you let me in on this secret? I found you out. I found out what's going on here. And I found out what you've done. But I don't understand why. And also, I don't understand why you couldn't tell me. So we hear in Krishna's reply that actually, because Krishna is really only interested in the loving dealings of his devotees and in their well-being and in the sanctity of those loving dealings. Because in the last class I gave, I highlighted this point that Krishna was more angry at Lord Brahma than he was at Indra, because Lord Brahma caused separation and Indra caused all the Vrajvasis to come together. That Krishna tells Lord Balaram, first he says, in an external way, he says, well, it's not that I lied to you, I just, you never asked. You weren't there when Agasura was killed, and you weren't there that day when Lord Brahma took all the cows and the cowherd boys. All the calves and the cowherd boys. It was your birthday, and you were in Nandagaon, and you were being decorated and celebrated for your birthday ceremonies by all the elder gopis. So it just never came up, you know? And so this is why it could happen externally without Balaram's knowledge. And then he told Balaram, he said, and honestly, I didn't want you to suffer for an entire year out of separation from your friends. Because if you knew that I was manifested as them, you would know that they weren't there, and that would cause you unbearable pain. Because I know that you love them like I love them. So I couldn't bring myself to just tell you, and you never asked. So you weren't there, it was your birthday, and you weren't on the banks of the river with us, and you weren't there for the killing of Agasura. And I didn't want to tell you, because I wasn't happy about what was happening even. What to speak of, you know, sharing that unhappiness with you. Because Krishna's thoughts, the very movement of his heart, they're always with his devotees, no matter what. He's always thinking about his devotees. And indeed, he tells us, when he's speaking to Durvas Muni, he says, Sadhavo Hridayam Mayam Sadhanam Hridayam Tuham. I am in the heart of my devotees, and my devotees are in my heart. Mad anyat te na jhananti naham tebyo managapi. I don't know anything other than them, and they don't know anything other than me. This is the only thing that I'm interested in. So please forgive me, but I just couldn't bring to tell you. I would rather you be happy while this whole thing transpires. And then, when I was studying this chapter, I found something very beautiful that goes right along with this. Actually, three verses back, there's a purport that I would like to read that Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives. It's to verse 25, and it's a little bit long, but it's quite beautiful. So, I'll just go ahead and read that. The verse is, previously, from the very beginning, the gopis had motherly affection for Krishna. Indeed, their affection for Krishna exceeded even their affection for their own sons. In displaying their affection, they had thus distinguished between Krishna and their sons, but now that distinction disappeared. And then the commentary is, from the very beginning, the gopis and cows had more motherly affection for Krishna than their own offspring. But now that Krishna had become their sons and calves, their love for their sons and calves became equal to what they previously had for Krishna. Krishna's affection as a child toward the mothers was the same as before, but from the commencement of the Brahma Vimohan Lila, Krishna became their sons in actuality. It may be objected that Krishna in the form of the cowherd boys should have had the same affection for their mothers as their actual sons, since a previous verse stated that Krishna took up exactly the character, dress, form, and age as each cowherd boy. Though Krishna is the supreme independent controller, and everyone from Brahma to even his personal expansions is dependent on him, he is dependent on prema, and he is controlled by prema. Prema is not dependent on him. Krishna cannot control or restrict prema. Sridhar Swami says this irregularity is difficult to prevent in Krishna. Such uncontrollable prema was in the hearts of the mothers towards Krishna in the form of their sons. Thus Krishna, in the form of their sons, forgot his powers as God. Since he assumed the role of their sons, he remained dependent on them like a commander next to the king. One should not say that such dependence on love is a fault. Rather, it is Krishna's ornament. As the living entity's dependence on Maya is the cause of his sorrow, so Krishna's dependence on prema is the cause of ever-increasing bliss. This is the realization of the great devotees. And so, I found that a beautiful elucidation into the heart of Krishna and who we're worshipping and what our goal is, what it is that we're supposed to aspire to. Because it's just so beautiful that Krishna he's completely controlled by the prema of his devotees. He even feels that he can't reciprocate with it properly at times. Like in the pastime of Sudama Brahmana, when he, out of embarrassment, doesn't speak about giving the opulence to Sudama, because he feels that this is nothing compared to the love Sudama's offering me. I can't give much. Or when he speaks to the gopis, he says, wow, what's that? What's the line? It's leaving. It's a famous line. I cannot repay you. Na pareham. For what you've done, for the level of sacrifice that you've given, there's nothing I can give. You'll have to take your own love as its own payment. Because I can't. I can't reciprocate with that. You love me so much. I can't even reciprocate. I can't do anything. So, this type of being bound, we've been told by Sri Rupa Goswami, who has given us in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu an express treatise, which Srila Prabhupada gave us very, very early on in the Nectar of Devotion, because he wanted us to understand these things. Actually, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, it was imperative for any of his initiated disciples, as soon as they became initiated, they were to study thoroughly, threadbare, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Because it's the of this book. He gave it to us before he gave us the Bhagavatam. He gave it to us before he gave us the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he explained this. So Srila Rupa Goswami, there in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he's identified this phenomenon, which is a final result of bhakti or prema. And he's called it Sri Krishna Akarshini, which means that Krishna, because the word Krishna means all attractive, Akarshini. He who is all attractive is helplessly attracted to pure love. He's controlled by it. His bhaktas, they have his heart. Like he said, sadavo hridayam ayam, sadunam hridayam toham. They're in my heart and I'm in theirs. They have me. When he speaks that to Durvas Muni, in effect, he's saying, you're coming to me for mercy, but I don't have mercy to give because I've given it to my devotee, Ambarish. Because he loves me, actually, I go to him when I want to do something. He's the one who can give it out. So you have to go and ask him. I don't have it. It's not here. Because my heart is with him. And I can only give mercy from my heart. So you have to go see him. This is the implication. Because Ambarish Maharaj is a premi bhakta, he can actually give Krishna's mercy. Because we hear from our acharyas that the devotees, they are actually the manifestation of Krishna's kripa shakti. They can give Krishna. No one else can give Krishna. Krishna doesn't even give Krishna. There's a verse in the Bhagavatam, Muktim Dadati Karichit Smanabhakti Yoga. I give liberation, I give bhukti, I give kami, I give you enjoyment, whatever you want. If you approach Krishna, if you worship him, specifically him, just you and him, he'll give you opulence. He'll give you name and fame. He'll even give you liberation, which for Vaishnavas means Vaikuntha. You can go, if you worship Vishnu, or if you worship Krishna without approaching his bhaktas, then you can go to Vaikuntha. You can get this Sarishti, Sarupya, Salokya, Samipya. You can be on the same planet, or you can have a planet of your own that's just like his. You can have riches like him. You can have a form like his. You can get these things. He will give them. But bhakti proper, Ragmarg bhakti, Krishna does not give. he can't actually give it because it's in the heart of his premi bhaktas. Only they can give. And so there are a couple really nice examples that underline this point of Krishna being controlled by his devotees that I find are very, very, they're very, very profound, and they're very, very, they underline the point very nicely. So if we look at Mother Yashoda, Krishna is a little boy. So at about 6 o'clock in the morning, or I'm not sure of the specific time, but anyway, he has to wake up in the morning. Mother Yashoda goes, and personality of Godhead, today I'm going to sleep in for another hour. Leave me alone. He can't do that because he's bound by his love for Mother Yashoda. Ultimately, he has to do what she says because that's Vatsalya Ras. That's Vatsalya Prem. He's bound by that. He only wants to reciprocate with that relationship. Another more poignant example to show this binding and this how deep this relationship can go is Krishna is the sarathi of Arjuna. He takes the place of the chariot driver of Arjuna, which we can understand from a Western perspective is, okay, he's working for him. Arjuna's the general, he's doing the killing, you know, he's got the bow, he's the guy. Maybe he says, you know, go this way, go that way. And so Krishna, he accepts to do that. But a lot of us don't understand the implication of what it means to be a charioteer in Vedic times. To be a charioteer in Vedic times, because you're talking about really, really intense battles. The noise level is unbelievably high. There's almost, like, in the middle of the battle, verbal communication may not be possible. And so what happens is the charioteer is situated on a little bit of a lower platform on the chariot, and he's got the reins. And then the general, or the Maharati, who is driving the chariot, he's standing there with his bow, and he's fighting. And if he wants to go left, what he does is he kicks the charioteer in the left shoulder with his foot. He says, that's how he says left. If he wants to go right, he kicks him in the right shoulder. If he wants to stop, he puts his foot in the middle of his back and sets it there, which means stop. So this was happening on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Krishna was going through this in his relationship with Arjuna. He didn't turn around and say, how dare you, Arjuna? I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead and you're going to kick me? Because he's bound by that rasa, by that deep, deep feeling of love with his devotee. And his devotee is under Yoga Maya and so much in love that Arjuna doesn't know. When he sees the universal form, he thinks, oh my God, I was kicking God. I was just... You know, I asked you to go, you know, forward into the battle. I'm commanding God. Actually, I said that backwards. He sees the universal form, and he sees Krishna as God, but that's before the battle. So then after, Yoga Maya is so powerful, and Krishna's desire to reciprocate these relationships is so powerful, that Arjuna still does the foot thing. He goes through the whole battle. He kicks Krishna in the shoulder. Here, here, let's go here, let's go here. I mean, we can understand, even in our contemporary society, how bad it is if you touch somebody with your foot. It's like, Prabhu, I'm sorry. Please forgive me. We don't. What to speak of? Imagine if your Guru Maharaj came by and you accidentally kicked your Guru Maharaj with your foot. You would feel horrible. You would, oh my God. My life's over, you know. What to speak of intentionally kicking him in the back? No, what to speak of God? So this is the level that Krishna, he comes down to reciprocate these beautiful, beautiful emotions and these beautiful reciprocations with his devotees. And this is why we have to approach Vaishnavas. Real Vaishnavs, wonderful. It's not hard to find a Vaishnav, actually, because at least for myself, I'm quite fallen. So most devotees are worthy for me to take shelter of. A lot of times I have to remind me of that, because since I'm so fallen, a lot of times I look down at other devotees. But when I'm honest with myself, it's not hard to find a higher Vaishnav than me. And so progressively speaking, we have to take shelter of devotees, we find that are deeper in their love for Krishna than us. Maybe they're not deeper in erudition, or maybe they're not better musicians or cooks or managers or whatever, but we have to find a Vaishnav who we can associate with, who is deeper in his love for Krishna, who is further along this process of having Krishna in his heart and being in Krishna's heart in an inseparable way. And in that way we can advance on the path of bhakti, because there's no other way. We can't get Krishna any other way. And indeed, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his song, O Hey Vaishnav Thakur, he elucidates this exactly, literally. He writes, in the final line of that song, he says, Krishna is yours, so you have the power, please give me Krishna. And our acharyas, they echo the same thing. Over and over, we see it from different angles. We see Srila Rupa Goswami, he says, Adau Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sangha. But then Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he takes that verse, he says, okay, Srila Rupa Goswami says, in the beginning there is faith. But he says this word, adao, because he's very good at unpacking words, he says this word, adao, it means sadhu sangha. It means specifically, not just sadhu sangha, but satam kripa. Satam means a devotee, and kripa means his mercy. That the only way the process of bhakti can start is by satam kripa, is by the mercy of a devotee. And then he says, this word is split into two. Adao means satam kripa, and it means mahat seva. It means serving that devotee, or serving that group of devotees. And then in that way, because these aren't static steps, they're dynamic, in that way you get more mercy. And so one way I like to say it is, our process begins with sadhu sangha, because there's no other way that we can have the qualification for bhakti than by sadhu sangha. It flourishes in sadhu sangha, because there's no way to advance in Krishna consciousness without earnest sadhu sangha. It flourishes in sadhu sangha. So it begins with sadhu sangha. The bulk of our practice and our process happens because of sadhu sangha. If we look at Upadeshamrita, we see the same thing. We see this satovrite in the fourth verse. Rupa Goswami says the most important of all of the six things that you can do, or of all the six things that are favorable, satovrite is there, that we be around the sadhus and we try to emulate their activities. In other words, we take the sadhus into our heart and we say, I want to be like them. I want to be with them. They are my idols. They are in effect my real deities, my inspiration. You know, because we worship the deity form of Krishna, but Krishna has told us, you have to worship my devotee. He says in Bhagavad Gita, he who worships me is not really my devotee. He worships my devotee. That's my real devotee. And so, again, it begins with sadhu sangha. It flourishes in sadhu sangha. There's no other way for bhakti to really grow. And it culminates in sadhu sangha. Because ultimately, it culminates in us moving in to Vraj, and us being in sadhu sangha all the time. Because who are the topmost sadhus other than the Vrajvasis? Whether your aspiration is for Sakyaras or Vatsalyaras or Madhuryaras, most of us are not on that level of contemplating those things. But the fact of the matter is that wherever you go in Vraj, you will be under the care of and surrounded by a group of devotees who already love Krishna. In fact, they have to let you in. We have to go to Gopeshwar Mahadev if we want to go into Vraj. He's a devotee. Vaishnavanam yata shambhu. So no matter what, sadhu sangha is there. That's our only entrance into these things. So it's 8:20 now. If there are any questions or comments or corrections, please. I hope I can answer nicely, and I hope if there's corrections, it's not too fiery, but at the same time, it's very purifying, so it's appreciated.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hello. Thank you for your class. Very nice points again, once again. It's nice when you see a variety of devotees. They have so many...
Let's skip this part.
It's just nice to, you know, see different points. So I would say definitely gratitude is the main thing. So sometimes, you know... anyway, we'll continue with that. We'll have a debate afterwards.
Yeah, that's
we'll
okay.
You made so many points. One point, a couple points I'd like to highlight. First, the point I really... I never heard this, but it's a very nice point you made. We've heard similar things, but I really appreciate that point where Krishna's dependent on prema, and you gave the example of how Arjun was kicking like a horse. You control you're a person like a horse. I think you kick the horse in certain ways to indicate something. So that's what Arjun
that's how it works. The Vedic charioteer. That's how he's communicated to.
So I really appreciate that point, and definitely the point of you were also quoting Ambarish Maharaj. You quoted one particular verse. I'm not sure if you remember the specific verse, but...
Sadavo Hridayamayam. It's Vishnu speaking to Durvas Muni in the ninth canto, 6th chapter, 68th verse.
There's a couple of verses that reminded me of that. I don't remember, but there's a nice verse that says, Prima hoite Krishna hoi nija bhatta vash, prima hoite poi Krishnata seva sukaras. Same thing as that verse. Krishna, he's the greatest of the greatest, and he's controlled by the prema of even the most insignificant devotee. And there's a nice verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the last chapter. The last chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita is called Shishashaka. I don't remember which verse, but it describes who has prema. You quoted a similar verse where you were saying last class that Rupa Goswami says, I'm the most fallen, the most sinful. Well, this verse says, Primeta swabhav yaham primeta sambandha semane krishne more nahi prema ganda. It describes that one who has prema thinks nahi prema ganda. I have not one drop of love for Krishna. I'm the most sinful, the most fallen. And generally speaking, anyone can say that. Like you were mentioning, another point you were mentioning that I appreciate it is that we should take shelter of those whose prema is deep, and not necessarily just the erudition, because sometimes we like the gift wrapping, the erudition, but we don't really see whether it's they have the gift, the prima. Of course, we can't judge anyone, but that's the criteria. And there's a nice quote that says, I would rather feel compassion than know the meaning of it. And that's the difference between, I'll connect it to one pastime, maybe you could, I was reading lately, maybe you could expand on some of these points, because one of my favorite points I like to make to devotees is that when we speak of these good qualities that are supposed to be embodiments of prema, like humility, mercy, love, compassion, if you think about it, these qualities are only meant to be used when things don't go our way and when people don't treat us properly. Like, you would never tell your rich father, my dear father, I forgive you for giving me Mercedes-Benz for my birthday. I'll tolerate my $50 million inheritance once I graduated from high school. We see that the policy is only meant to be used when things came to him. Then he lived as a homeless wanderer. And so while he was like most homeless people, he was disrespected. He was urinated, spit on, and he was roaming throughout the countryside. And he also covered himself in his own stool, but it smelled like fragrant flowers. But the reason he covered himself in his own stool is because he wanted to live like a python, where he wasn't. So my whole point of mentioning this pastime is that his purpose was to be purposely disrespected. That way he could be detached from the material world and praise and honor. And a lot of times the tendency is that you can only really test your humility, your mercy, your compassion is when you put yourself in a circumstance where you're likely to be disrespected. However, there's one flip side of the coin, one last point I like to make. Rishabhadai, a lot of times people say, I want to be in the most opulent position. I want to wear the most lavish clothes. I want to wear the greatest jewels. Why? So I won't be disrespected. However, prior to Rishabhadai becoming a homeless wanderer, When he was born, his name Rishabha means the best. So when he was born, there were signs that he was a divinity, the divinity, and everyone would praise him. And so when he was praised by everyone, yes, you should be enthroned as the emperor, you know, you should be coronated as the emperor of the throne. Indra became so envious that he withdrew the rain from the earth. He was like, why has he been called the best and not me? So he withdrew. My whole point, so a lot of times people say, if I'm put in a very poor situation, I'll be disrespected. But we see on the flip side of the coin, even if you're in the most opulent position, you're still going to be disrespected because people may become envious of you. So there's a nice quote by Buddha. He says, they praise one who is silent. They blame one who is silent. They blame one who speaks a lot. They blame one who speaks a little. There's no one on earth who isn't blamed. As a solid rock is not shaken by the wind, wise people falter not amidst praise or blame or honor and dishonor. So my question is, what are some steps we could move forward to develop the humility like Queen Kunti? I don't want these material opulence. I would prefer to be disrespected so I won't be so arrogant and so impatient because, you know, I have all these opulence and I deserve this respect. So, but that's not the tendency. So what some steps we can move forward to at least take a step towards Queen Kunti's prayers of, you know, so in all likelihood, we could develop these realizations that, these qualities can only be manifested when I'm disrespected. So maybe you could expand on some of those points.
Well, thank you, because you said a lot, but then you summed it up into a nice question at the end. So, well done. I remember thinking at the Govardhan retreats this last year along very similar lines, because I had a very, 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 very difficult year. Difficult year. In my Krishna consciousness, it was one of the most trying circumstances I've ever been through. And I won't explain on the Vyasas on what that means or the details of that per se, but I went through some really, really, really heavy tests. And in hindsight, because when I was at the Govardhan retreat, everything had subsided and everything had worked out, I looked back and I saw that because of those very heavy tests, I ended up moving forward quite a lot. Mainly because I was insulated in a lot of good sangha. I had four or five really wonderful advisors that I could go to and who were holding my hand. Literally holding my, two or three of them literally holding my hand to help me get through that. And so I'm extremely thankful for that. But then some kind of immature part of me thought to, because the thing is with pain and with difficulty, in this world they're relative, and so we're quite often to forget the intensity of them as they move into the distance of our past. And so because it had been 3-4 months and I had processed a lot, you know, and I had moved on to another chapter in my life and emotional wounds were more or less scars or almost healed, I became a little bit fired up. And so I thought, you know, I made a lot of advancement in that period. Honestly speaking, like, I learned a lot about myself, I went through a lot, and I really did. I'll even say that now, confidently, like, I moved forward a lot in my faith and in my conviction as a devotee in that period, in ways that I may not see again in such a quick, condensed time period. And so I thought, man, if I could get my act together, maybe if I could pray, just like you said, like Queen Kunti, you know, now I see she was praying for calamities, you know. Maybe if I pray like that, you know, how can I act in such a way that I can bring these things on and then I can do that again? jump the ladder a couple rungs, you know. It was tough, but I'm still here. Let's spin the wheel again. And I was thinking to ask Sachinandan Maharaj that question. Because I was also thinking, oh, wow, this is a deep, realized thing, and I'm very, you know, I'm not many people would say this, you know, it's a, you know, a little motive on my part, maybe, you know, in front of all these people, in front of a bunch of people who I respect, and like that, I'm asking a very deep, intelligent question. And then somebody else asked it for me, but they asked from the other perspective. They said, Maj, I'm really afraid, because I went through some really heavy things, And I can't honestly say that I want those things to happen to me again. I can't honestly say that I'm ready to go through that again, because it was so difficult and treacherous and terrifying. And so how can I show Krishna that I am just now coming, that I'm working on it, so he doesn't have to put me through that grinder again? And then I was waiting for Maharaj's answer, because I was thinking, wow, this is, and also because my ego was there, I was thinking that, oh, you know, because Maharaj gives many stories about his near-death experiences and like this, and so I was thinking he must also have this mentality that, yeah, bring it on. At this point, it's been 10 times. You know, I've almost died 9 or 10 times. And, you know, I've been through so many, been in war zones, been through this, been through that. So I was expecting that he would give an answer along the lines of my expectations. And to my surprise, Maharaj, being a 50-year devotee, he said, yeah, you're right. Even me, I'm not ready to pray like that, you know. I think like, Krishna, please, I got the point. Like, I'm ready to start working on this step by step, step by step. I want to move forward. I want to advance. Like, please don't throw me another calamity. Because this is a very high stage. Mother Yashoda is in the grips of prema. You know, and so she can pray for calamity, because when calamity happens and she thinks about Krishna, she's with Krishna. When the Vrajvasis, or when Arjuna, or when whoever, when something crazy happens, they go into a state of meditation when they feel separation from Krishna, and then they're with Krishna. There's no difference between reality and their meditation. Their meditation is another facet of reality. For us, it's not the same. For me, it's not the same. I don't know, maybe one of you, or maybe some of you experience that, but I've never experienced that. I would like. That's where we want to be, but I'm not there. And so, actually, what we can do, the positive steps that we can take, is to actually put one foot forward in front of the other, and in our day-to-day, start showing Krishna that I do want this. Don't make him shake up our lives. Don't make him, you know, smash us. Don't try to prepare for when Krishna is going to break my life to pieces, and then I'll surrender. The thing is, truthfulness is the last leg of Dharma that we have in Kali Yuga. Our entire process of sadhana is actually just to cultivate sincerity. Our entire process of sadhana is just to come to the point where we're not so crooked that we can say, Krishna, this is where I am, please help me. Which seems so simple. It seems so easy. It seems like we all should have done that on our first day. And then it should have been easy, smooth sailing. But the entire process of anartha nivritti is undoing all of the knots and all of the preconditioning that is there that stops us from just being able to say, Krishna, this is where I am, please help me. And then acting on that advice. Because the super soul is always guiding. Krishna is always guiding. Guru is there. Vaishnavas are there. So what's the problem? The problem is, I'm always trying to make the scenario bigger than that. I'm always trying to make it that, no, I have to prepare for Armageddon. I have to prepare for, you know, everything that's going to fall apart. I have to prepare for that next calamity. I have to prepare this. I'm too fallen for the simple route. But at the end of the day, we're just going to keep hitting calamities until we become simple. As Mahaprabhu says, Gaurivinda Maharaj likes to say this, Mahaprabhu is patita pavana. He's the deliverer of the fallen. Patita means fallen, pavana means deliver. He's not kapatya pavana. Kapatya means crooked. It means hypocrite. So to the degree that we're hypocrites, sit down and do austerities with a crooked mentality. I can be the cleanest person you know and do all sorts of rituals with a crooked mentality. But truthfulness and crookedness cannot exist side by side. So we just have to become truthful. We have to become honest. We have to say, these are my problems. You know them. You know.
Thank you. One last quote. That's why Jesus says, it is not the healthy who needs a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance. So, same principle. So,
yeah. Thank you. We see this in all traditions, that repentance, repent. Just tell God that I am lame. I'm useless and I've messed up everything, and yeah, that's my position, but that's sadhana bhakti, and that's difficult. So we have to try every day. And I'll end on one note, because it's nice to end on a sweet note. When we meet Vaishnavs, this is why Sangha is so important. When we meet Vaishnavs that are actually deep in their place, they're operating on this level. They are not crooked, and we can feel that when we're around them. Most of the devotees that met Srila Prabhupada, they didn't know philosophy, they didn't know anything. They knew opposite. They knew a bunch of hodgepodge stuff coming from this guru and that guru, you know, Vivekananda and Paramahamsa Yogananda. They knew little tidbits they heard here and there. Jimi Hendrix did Axis of Love and put his face on Krishna's picture. You know, they knew this. But what they saw in Prabhupada was, this person is pure. This person is not crooked. And it was so attractive. It was so attractive that it created an entire movement, Prabhupada's humility. Because our acharyas, they say dānya and prema are two sides of the same coin. Humility, real humility, is just, it's just prema from a different perspective. So like that, we have to be around devotees, and then we can see, he's not motivated by ill intentions. That's how I want to be. I want to be like him. He just, some negativity comes, he throws it off his back. You quoted Buddha, the real thing. He understands the nature of this world and that he doesn't want to be a part of it anymore. Anyway, I'll end here. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Sri Kishore Kishori ki jai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.